This is the Skilding Podcast. Hello and welcome to the Skilding Podcast. We believe that true deep learning occurs when three things happen. You must 1, understand, 2, remember, and 3, deliberately practice your newly acquired knowledge. This podcast covers the first part, understand. Complete this learning by getting the second and third part at skilding.com. So together, let's get the key takeaways from this book understood. So we are back on the podcast with Aoife O'Brien. Hello, Aoife.
Hey, Gavin. How are you?
I think it's gas when people start recording podcasts as if we haven't been talking for the last 20 minutes here. It's like, oh, hello.
This is the official
the official opening, yeah, of the podcast. Aoife, tell the audience who you are, what you do, and so on.
Absolutely, yeah. So I spent almost 20 years working in market research in the fast-moving consumer goods industry. So essentially, analysing people's behaviour in supermarkets using huge amount of data, like really, really interesting stuff. I didn't gather the data. I analysed it and I dealt with clients and I made recommendations around sales and marketing strategies. So something that was hugely interesting for me. It brought me all over the world as well. Not that they brought me all over the world. I travelled the world and I got jobs doing something that I really, really enjoyed. And it got to a stage where I wasn't really enjoying it anymore. And I could kind of pinpoint why that was, but I didn't really have the language for it. Anyway, I worked in Sydney for a while and then I left that job because I wasn't enjoying it anymore. That's a polite way of saying it. And I traveled again. So I traveled on my way over to Australia and I traveled quite a bit then on my way back, and I got another job in Dublin. And I stayed in that job for about 4.5 years. Again, didn't really have the language to understand like why I wasn't enjoying it or what was going on. And I left that about 5.5 years ago, and I went on to do a diploma in coaching, executive and life coaching. And I also did a certificate in career coaching, thinking I'm going to change the world. I'm going to help people with their careers. And I had an epiphany that summer while I was doing the coaching diploma. And I decided to go on and do this master's that I had been researching before. So I went on to do a master's in organizational behavior. And from that, I started my business using the research I did on my master's, which centered on this concept of fit and how we feel a sense of belonging or how we feel a sense of fitting in at work. And that's sort of how my business has evolved. I didn't leave my corporate role with the intention of setting up a business. Never my intention at all. But it just sort of evolves that way. So I set up my business Happier at Work while I was still doing the master's. And then I started my podcast also while still doing the master's, podcast of the same name, Happier at Work. And that's sort of what has brought me to where I am today.
What, do you have the language now for why you weren't enjoying the
work? Yeah. For me, it was very much this sense of fit or a sense of belonging. So when I was in Australia, for example, I loved the day-to-day tasks. I was really good at it. I wasn't necessarily getting the recognition I felt I deserved. If I look back, it's about my need satisfaction at work. So most people, they don't know when their needs are being satisfied or not being satisfied, but you know, you don't really pay attention or you don't know what your needs are, but you know when you feel frustrated at work, that means that your needs are not being satisfied in some way. So I wasn't getting recognition, which is one of my psychological needs. I like to feel recognized for the work that I'm doing, for the contribution that I'm making. And also there was a mismatch of values. So they were saying one thing and they were doing another. So even internally, I think there was a slight mismatch between how they were portraying themselves and the behavior and how the behavior actually turned up. So that was a huge thing for me. I think if they're telling me one thing, so they're telling me I'm going to be promoted, they're telling me I'm going to be a director, they're telling me all of these wonderful things. And then behind my back, they promoted someone else in my place and they didn't communicate that. So that caused a lot of frustration for me. And maybe they thought, you know, the golden handcuffs and all that, I was sponsored on a visa there. They probably thought I was never going to leave, but I was like, I'm not dealing with this. I'm not accepting this. And I left I did query like all of the reasons behind what happened, and I wasn't really given a good enough valid reason. I was told that the person who had become my manager wasn't really my manager, they were more my supervisor, and if I wanted any mentoring or anything like that, I should go to his manager, which made no sense whatsoever. So the person kind of in charge backtracked on everything, wasn't a positive leader by any measure of it. And then subsequently in Dublin, I think it was more a values misalignment again. So like they're saying one thing, they're saying this is simple, but it's the most bureaucratic organization I had ever worked in. Again, my needs weren't really being met. But then also what I noticed, and again, this is in retrospect only, that I deliberately chose a path that didn't really align with the strengths that I brought to the business. So I would have been much better placed in another role, but they gave me options that kind of limited that choice. So either I can be on the leadership team in a role that I didn't really want, but I was going to be on the leadership team, you know, total ego decision, or I can choose to report to someone else on the leadership team and do something I really enjoyed, but only do that day in, day out. So I went with the leadership role, and I didn't feel like I was bringing my all to that role. Anything I do, I really want to do in an excellent way. I want to really bring my all to any role that I do. I want people to say, wow, she's amazing at what she does. That role didn't give me that opportunity.
Well, I think you're amazing at what you do. I think your podcast is great. So it's interesting, like there's probably a lot of people listening who would be like you in their role and are not pushed to make the final decision to leave or to kind of go out on their own or to do something similar. What was it what was like the final straw? Like, or what was the thought process in your head for really going, do you know what, actually, that's the decision made, I'm done.
Yeah. I've had a few conversations like this recently. It's quite interesting. And someone asked me that exactly that, because I think a lot of people, there's this pressure, I think, to make a decision. And when you want to leave a role, sometimes it can take you years to pluck up the courage, to find something else, to get your confidence back. Because I think oftentimes when we're in those roles that are not really suited to us, our confidence gets really knocked. And so sometimes it takes people a long time. So I would say with that role in Sydney, I just had enough. I was called into a meeting one day. This is going to sound very strange, but it was in a meeting room I had never been in. Traditionally in the past, it had been used as, say, focus group. So it had a mirror on one side.
All right.
And you can only assume that the other side of that mirror, there's someone else sitting there listening to everything that's going on. So I was brought into this meeting room, and I'd never been in it before. I was there in a meeting which was supposed to have been with my boss's boss, but my boss, immediate boss, came into that meeting as well. And they just slayed me in that meeting. They were like, this is everything that you're doing wrong in the role. This is that and whatever. And probably waiting for a response from me, being watched by some of the senior leaders on the other side to see how I reacted or whatnot. So anyway, I remember the very next day on the train, because I lived in the city in Sydney, but where I worked was about half an hour outside the city. So on the train into work the next day, I was typing up my resignation letter and I just handed it to my boss. And the first thing he did was run down to HR. He didn't try and convince me to stay. He didn't try to kind of go to his boss to see if there was anything that they could do to make me stay. He went straight down to HR and he handed in that letter. So I think for me, that was very telling that they wanted me out, that maybe I was causing issues, or he certainly wanted me out anyway. So put me in that awkward position. So I think that sort of tipped it over the edge. But I felt really humiliated by the fact that I had been told all of these things, I'd been promised all of these things. And then without telling me, he was promoted to be my manager. And I just felt then like, well, I'm a little bit stuck here. I don't know where I can move to. I was looking for other options work-wise to go work somewhere else, but I didn't find anything that suited me. So I just decided I didn't really want to invest another 2 or 3 years into Sydney, because at the time that's what you're thinking. You're like, if I take another job, that's another 2 or 3 years minimum that you're going to stay in that job. Otherwise, to, you know, I'm using air quotes here for anyone not watching on video, but it's you know, it looks bad on your CV if you're only in a job for a year. Just all of these crazy things that we tell ourselves. And then I think in Dublin, it sort of came to a head. So I had a conversation with my boss. I said, listen, this role is not really what I expected. It's not really working out for me. And he presented some options, not concrete options, but he said, oh, we could get you a global role where you stay in Dublin. You know, and there was all these kind of things. And about 3 months later, I just thought, I don't think I want to stay here. And there was a few things. Like, I had previously been managing a friend of mine. So she had been a friend of mine since college. So we've been friends for, what, 15 years or thereabouts. And I had been managing her. Very, very difficult person to manage. And after I stopped managing her, she basically just ignored me at work. She just blanked me the entire time, which was really tough. So you're in a small office and someone, you're walking by in the corridor or you're trying to engage in a conversation about work, and I just got absolutely blanked. So there was that. And there was a few other challenges, and I just thought, I'm not enjoying this anymore at all, and I need to get out. So I'm always really surprised, to kind of bring it full circle, I'm always really surprised when people take a long time to make those decisions. I think the decision is sort of made quickly, but we're afraid to take action on making that decision. So for me, I think it was like, I've made the decision, now I need to act on it. Whereas oftentimes people know what it is deep down that they really want to do or what they don't want to do. And it's just agonizing because they feel like they haven't made a decision. And the indecision is what's really crippling, I think.
Yeah, well, their loss is the podcast world's gain.
That's what
I
like to, that's what I like to think.
Yeah, so that is a mad story, all right. Tell us about the book that you picked to talk about.
Yeah, so I picked High Performance Habits by Brendon Burchard. And I think for me, I picked it for a few different reasons. So the reason I came about this book in the first place was quite randomly. It was an Instagram ad, and it was one of those, get your book for free, all you have to do is pay the shipping. I was like, whoa, all I have to do is pay the shipping. Now, of course, you know, the shipping then is like 20, whatever. No, it wasn't. It was about $7, the shipping. And I thought, $7 for a book that I've never heard of. Oh, go on then. Yeah. And so I bought this book, and it was delivered, you know, a few weeks later. It's, you know, nothing like Amazon or anything like that, where it's next day. It was a few weeks before it was delivered. And it was really nice because there's like an inscription inside saying like, this is Brendon and thanks so much for buying the book. I'd never heard of this guy in my life. I started following him then on social media, and I guess he would have had my email from buying the book and things like that as well. But he's saying things like, oh, you know, let other people know that you're reading it. And, you know, I just thought it was a really nice touch from that perspective. And then I started reading it a couple of years ago. I probably got a chapter or a couple of chapters in. And then I put it down. And so me being me, high achiever, and it's sitting there on my to be read pile. So I hadn't picked it up again. And I picked it up again in the summer. And it was at a time that I really needed to read it. It's practical. It gives you that gentle nudge that you need to take action, but it does it in a persuasive, in a strong way, but also in a kind of a caring way. Like, we know that not everyone is like this. We know not everyone is like you, but if you want to be a high performer, then these are the non-negotiable things that you need to do. And I think that's what I really liked about it, that it's practical. He shares some tips from his own personal experience, from client experiences and things like that as well. And I think if you relate to being a high performer, and I think a lot of people do, and, you know, I was kind of having to think about this before the podcast, that probably more than 50% of people think that they're above average and that think that they're these high performers. But I'm sure everyone at the very least aspires to be a high performer. So it's quite relatable then. So when you're reading it, you're like, oh, I want to be like that. Even if you're not like that already, you think, I want to be like that.
Yeah, it's very true. Like, even you could be a high performer, not necessarily even in your job. It could be just in your personal life that you want to be a better parent, a better spouse or whatever. So better cross-country runner, whatever the thing is. It's interesting what you said there about picking up the book. It's amazing how a book finds you just when you need it. Like that's one of the reasons I love doing this podcast on books is because, well, one, I love talking about books, I love reading books, but when somebody recommends their book, you know, when somebody says, you have to read this book, well, good, tell me, which book do I have to read? And I'll read it. Like that's, I love it when, because there's so many options out there for books, obviously, that when somebody picks one book in particular and says, this is the one that did it for me, then that's that's a good enough recommendation for me to read it.
So, and I think I read so many books myself. I try, I aim to read 52 books a year, and I set myself a challenge on Goodreads every year. And so when I see unread books on Goodreads, it sort of taunts me as well. So I'm like, I better get back to that book that I've been reading. But I read a huge variety of books. So this, I would say, is kind of a combination of personal development and business as well. Probably more veering towards the personal development. But I love those kind of books. You know,
I find sometimes
self-improvement.
Yeah, I find sometimes with those books, those personal development and self-improvement ones, personally, I get to a point where I've almost consumed enough, now I need to do something. Like I might consume books for like 3 or 6 months or something, and then think, you kind of get not tired of them, but you kind of think, I just need to take action now. Like that's the thing. I need to do something now. I think there's a great quote about, like, I can't remember, it's a big long quote about like doing the thing. Like reading the book is not doing the thing. You need to do the thing sometimes.
But that's Kevin, that's why the work that you're doing is so important. You know, it's not about just knowing. And I think, you know, I fell into this trap as well, that you read all of this stuff and you know it, but you're not behaving in the way.
You're not doing it.
It's not showing up in your actions. It's showing up in your thoughts. And it's this whole thing of the knowing-doing gap, or the action versus intention. So what we see in other people are their actions, and what we see in ourselves are our intentions. So we see how other people act and behave. We don't see what their intentions behind those actions or behaviors were. We just see how they're showing up, and that's how we judge other people. And we judge ourselves based on our intentions and how we intended to come across, and that our intentions are good. And, you know, we have other people's best interests at heart, and that's how we show up in our behavior.
That idea of kind of your intentions is how you judge yourself is so true. Like the amount of times I had told myself, like back when I was in my 20s, I used to be really fit, right? Really into the gym and all that. And then you discover these things called pints. I don't know if you've ever heard of a pint, but they're delicious. They come in a glass. And, you know, you could kind of tell yourself, you know, I'm still fit. I'll be grand. Like, and then you're in your 20s and then you're in your 30s and then you're married and you have kids and all that. And so a couple of years ago there, actually a year and a half ago, a friend of mine set me a challenge to lose 2 stone, right? Because I hadn't seen him all over COVID. We went to Italy for a concert, for a Pearl Jam concert. And he is very direct. He's like, Jesus Christ, the fucking size of you. I'm like, well, it'll be grand. Like, I'll get it together. You know, like, I don't really care. Like, I'll be grand. Like, it'll sort itself out. And anyway, after a few more pints, he kind of set this challenge to lose 2 stone in 6 months, which happened to be Christmas Day. So this happened on June 25th, and it was 6 months would be December 25th. And I noticed something about myself before that challenge was set down, and was that I had congratulated myself for the intention of losing weight or kind of getting in shape. Like, you know, like you're sitting on the couch going, that's enough now. I'm gonna get in shape, and that's it. That's it. And it's in your head, you kind of reward yourself going, I've made the decision. I'm going to do it.
I'm going to have a pizza now.
But you don't actually do anything. Your intention is to do the thing, but you never actually do it. So anyway, I completed the challenge, lost the weight and got in shape again. But one of the things I've noticed is that you should don't talk about what you're going to do. Talk about what you have done. There's so many people who'll talk about, and I guess that ties into this book as well of high performers. They don't talk about all the things they're going to achieve. They don't even talk about the things they have achieved. They just do the work. They just do the thing.
Yeah.
They chop wood and they carry water, to quote the Zen proverb. Just do the work.
Mm.
So, the book. There are 6 habits. Seek clarity, generate energy, raise necessity, increase productivity, develop influence, and demonstrate courage. And they are broken into which I actually like as well. They're broken into three different sections. So habits one, two, and three are personal habits. That is seek clarity, generate energy, and raise necessity. And section two is social habits. So increase productivity, develop influence, and demonstrate courage. And then the third section is basically how to sustain it, how to avoid the traps there. But I really like this book because of the first one was great, seek clarity. So
yeah.
Will we start there? What can you tell us about that, or what do you remember?
Yeah. For me, I saw something from Oprah. I saw it yesterday. I had seen it before, but I saw it yesterday. What she says is, you know, what's the secret for people who achieve everything that they want in life? And she said, there is no secret. The real deep down thing is you need to know what it is you want. And most people don't.
Yeah.
Most people don't know what it is that they want out of life. They're either following someone else's path or doing something that other people think that they should do. And I think the first thing, and I fall into this trap all the time myself. You get distracted by other things. And I think you need to bring it back to yourself and think about, what is it that I really want? What is it that I really want here? And maybe sometimes it's easier to say what you don't want. So I knew in that job in Sydney, this is not what I want. I knew with that job back in Dublin, this is not what I want. And you can say no to the things that you don't want, but how then do you discover what it is that you do want? Now, another thing that I'll say from personal experience is that people often do know what they want deep down. But again, are they willing to admit that that's what they want, or are they willing to put the boundaries in place that they need in order to achieve what it is that they want to achieve? You know, I speak to so many people who say that they don't know what they want, but actually I think if you ask them a series of questions, they'd be able to figure it out quite easily.
Yeah, if they're honest with themselves.
Defining what it is that you want, if you're honest with yourself, define what it is that you really, really want. What does that look like? What does that feel like for you? You know, and I think we have this societal expectation. Kevin, you mentioned a second ago, you're like, you're in your 20s and then you're in your 30s, you're married and you have kids. That's not the path for everyone.
Exactly.
But we tend to kind of follow that path. Like, I'm in my 40s now. I don't have kids. I'm not married. That's an alternative path, you might say, to what some other people do. But it's thinking about, well, what is it that I really want? And I suppose not deferring that. Like, so if you've made your decisions up to now, like, this is the other thing. I think when people have kids, they're like, everything's on hold now because of the kids. I have to wait until X, Y, Z time. But like, what can you do now to try and support that future life that you want? You know, what are the things that you can actively put into place that will support that?
Yeah, I think people sometimes with kids, they kind of use it as an excuse then to not try, because I've got the kids and, you know, I have to make the dinner, and like those things they do happen, right? You do have to feed them and all that. They legally, I think you do have to feed them.
I think you might have to.
My kids cannot I cannot fill my kids. They keep eating anyway. But there's still plenty of time. Like, everyone is busy. Like, you have to decide how you'll spend your time. And I think that first habit is to seek clarity, is to know what exactly you're looking to achieve, what it'll feel like when you do achieve it. And I think for me personally, with what we're building with Skilding and, you know, all the other things we're doing, that I want to be the best teacher in the world. That's my goal. And I can do that with kids or without kids. And if I didn't have kids, I'd find something else, some other reason not to do it possibly. But the kids don't get in the way of that. This is my job. This is what I do. So I think it was funny, and I was reading, like anyone, I suppose, reading a book like this, you're thinking about yourself going, do I have clarity in what I want? And I think I do have clarity in what I want. But I think as I was reading that, it reminded me of another book called The Art of the Impossible. And that guy, I think it's Stephen Kotler, I think is the guy's name.
And another book to add to my list.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, another one. It's great though. Actually, we did a podcast on it. You can just listen to that to get the gist of it. But he talks about the art of the impossible is essentially like, if you're trying to achieve something that you've never achieved, or if you're trying to achieve something that no one has ever achieved, how do you do it? How do you actually become a master of something? How do you actually? And he kind of has this section on passion and how people, you know, follow their passions and so on. But he thinks people are missing a trick when it comes to following your passion, because passion will only take you so far. That's almost like motivation. Because if I'm passionate about teaching, which I am, and doing podcasts and helping people really learn, there's obviously parts of my job that are boring and that are frustrating and, you know, I don't enjoy. But the ultimate goal is to do the thing, is to teach. So passion will only take you so far. And what he says is that there's a step before that where you should think about what you're curious about. One of the things that you're curious about, your curiosity will lead to the passion that you need to drive through the boredom and the frustration and all that. So that's a good way to find clarity, is to think about your curiosity. What are the things you just can't put down, the things that you can't stop thinking about are always on your mind? Like, and it might not even necessarily be that thing, but it could be something adjacent to that you know, you're interested in. So that's what I thought about. And my own clarity came from knowing that I'm curious about people. I'm curious about how learning happens. I'm curious about how people absorb information and then go and actually deploy it out into the world. How do they do that?
Yeah. I thought you were going to say commitment, because I've heard that as well. Again, similar to motivation, commitment comes, or sorry, no, it's confidence comes from taking action. But it's commitment. When you commit to doing something on a regular basis, that's where the consistency comes from. It's not about like, oh, I don't feel like doing it today. Yeah. It's I have committed to doing this today and therefore I'm going to do it. But something else that kind of came up for me as you were talking about it was, well, first of all, the Start With the End in Mind from Stephen Covey. Yeah. Again, another book that I have brought with me to read here in Tenerife, because it's been on my to read list and I just never finished it. So now I'm going to start it and, you know, start from scratch again on that. I think it's really, really important. But another thing as well, there's a brilliant tool called the Sparky Type. So if you go to Sparky Type, it sounds like it is. So spark and then the letter E and T-Y-P-E type.com. And it's a free tool that you can take on, you know, it's a test, assessment, whatever you want to call it, that you take online. And what it tells you is essentially your purpose in life, or what really sparks you when it comes to work especially. And it sounds like you're an educator. So there's 10 different types. And, you know, this is not an ad for Sparky Type quiz, but it sounds like you're an educator. And what really lights you up is teaching people how to do things. Yeah. For me, I'm a problem solver. And so what really sparks me is identifying problems and finding a solution for them, usually through the gathering of data, through the gathering of information. And it made a lot of sense in the context of my entire career, because I really, really enjoyed doing all of that stuff. So you're gathering data and you're turning that into a presentation to solve a problem for someone, a real problem that they have. And I suppose I stopped caring about those marketing and sales problems, and I cared more about the people problems that companies were having. And so that's where I put my focus on now. That's where my curiosity is how do people interact with each other, and how do people relate to each other in the work context, and how could I have made better decisions in my career, and how could organizations create better environments for people to really thrive in?
You and I listen to podcasts for many reasons. And listening to a podcast like this probably means that you're looking to get insights about human psychology, motivation, persuasion, things like that. Well, if you're here to learn, listening is not enough. In fact, that'll get you one third of the way there. You will understand this topic. That's the first part. But secondly, you need to remember the most actionable content when you need it. It's what we call remembering it at the moment of truth. And thirdly, you'll need to find opportunities to deliberately practice this content. This episode has a suite of learning tools that you can use to help you do this. Just go to skillding.com and search for the title of this episode. Back to the show. It really is a journey to find the answer to that. Like, and again, that sounds like something from Oprah, like, but we're all on our journey. But it is so true that, like, I had so many different versions of Skilding that started off with me teaching maths to kids. I thought I want to have like a private tutoring school. And then I did that for a while and thought, actually, this doesn't resonate with me at all. This is not what I'm looking to do. And that turned into something else and turned into something else. And you're all the time just kind of looking, you know, what is it, looking for that You are looking for passion, but you are looking for the curiosity. And I think you and I probably have some alignment coming from a completely different point of view of like, why do people do what they do? Like, what's the, why do I do what I do? You know, actually just one thing you said there about commitment, that weight loss challenge that I had, there was days I definitely didn't want to work out. And I remember thinking, who cares if you don't want to work out? You're going to do it anyway. Like it's almost like the little kid in me goes, I don't want to do it. Like, well, you're going to do it anyway. Who cares? It's like
the monkey mind.
Yeah,
or whatever.
That's exactly it. Like, and I remember thinking, well, this isn't about motivation. It's about discipline. Just do the thing that you said you were going to do.
Yeah.
Otherwise, there was a horrific consequence if I didn't meet my target. I had to. They had picked out this. Do you know what a mankini is?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
So the
you don't need to say anymore.
The forfeit was to go down to the beach on Christmas Day and do a dance. So there was absolutely no way I was doing that. So, anyway, that's too much information, but that was what came out of it. So that was where my discipline came from. I wasn't going to be doing that dance. So seek clarity, right? We've nailed that one. So the next one then, generate energy. What does that mean to you when it comes to the second habit, to generate energy?
Yeah, for me, I think it's, well, where do you get your energy from? You know, and how do you keep going once you start something and once you get clear on it? Where does that energy actually come from?
Yeah.
In order to enable you to continue. So going back to this idea of commitment, well, I've committed to it, so I'm going to do it. But also thinking about, well, who are the people that I'm around? I'm reading more and more about like this, the idea of the five people but I'm reading more and more about how that's actually bullshit, that doesn't matter. Now that's more from a challenging perspective of like, if you think about it, does that really matter? How important is it to have those five people? But then I'm like, it always made sense to me. And if you think about who those five people are, and if you don't have those people who are sort of challenging you in whatever it is that you're doing, or if you're not surrounding yourself with people who aspire to great things the way you aspire to great things, then how is that impacting on your life and your ability to achieve those great things that you want to achieve? On that note of achievement, actually, another thing that I wanted to bring up in relation to this idea of seeking clarity and what it is that you want, like maybe take the focus less about the achievements that you want to have and think about more the lifestyle that you want to have. And you're like, how do I want my days to be? Because oftentimes we put our focus on sometime in the future, and when I achieve this and when I get that, when I get married, when I achieve this big goal that I have, when I run the marathon, whatever it might be. But we neglect to think, well, how are we showing up on a day-to-day basis, and how do we want our life to be on a day-to-day basis? So lifestyle maybe is not the correct term, because I think people associate lifestyle with, like, I don't know, something very different. But think about how you want your day-to-day life to actually be. How do you want to spend your time? Who do you want to spend that time with? And what do you want to be doing? What do you want to be known for? What do you want to be remembered for? How do you want to show up?
Yeah, and I've said this before on the podcast. It's kind of becoming a bit of a mantra of mine, but I have this idea that anyone, no matter who they are, whatever job they're in, all anyone really wants is to solve interesting problems with good people. Mm-hmm. And that can take on loads of different, there's loads of different ways of understanding it or interpreting, you know, what's an interesting problem and what are good people to you. But yeah, thinking about how you feel, like, do you feel fulfilled in what you're doing every day? I think that's what I notice as well, is that like when I would give presentations, I used to do a lot of stuff into companies and schools and stuff, and I remember thinking, when I was finished, I'd be tired, like, because I'd been on my feet for maybe 6 or 8 hours talking, but I felt energized from it. I felt like it gave me energy rather than sapped my energy. And you'll see people who'll do a presentation afterwards, they're just exhausted and they're just glad it's over, whereas if I've done a presentation, I want to do 10 more, you know. I want to do 10 more. If it went great, I just want to keep going. If it went terribly, I want to fix it. I think it's important to find what gives you energy and what takes your energy. So solving interesting problems with good people, I think, is a good way.
It's a really nice way to think about it. Yeah. And I think, if you bring that back to the individual basis, you can even think of individual tasks that don't give you energy. And I think from a happiness at work perspective, you don't have to enjoy everything that you do at work, but if you get to about 80%, that's good.
Exactly.
Yeah. There's always going to be some stuff that maybe you don't excel in, that maybe you think are a bit boring, a bit tedious. But then there's other people who love that kind of stuff. So again, if you can team up with these people who love that stuff, a lot of people don't like spreadsheets. I love spreadsheets. You know, so if you kind of team up with people who are complementary to the things that light you up, then it's like finding the dream team, I think. And you can do that in an organizational context if you talk about what people's unique strengths are. You know, what do they bring to the table? What does Sarah do really, really well that maybe I find a bit of a struggle? And not to kind of overload Sarah with work, but maybe she can take on the bits that other people don't enjoy.
Exactly. Give her energy.
She does enjoy. Yeah. That give her energy, and then you can kind of focus more on the stuff that you're really good at, maybe that she doesn't enjoy, you know, things like that.
I read another book we've actually covered it twice on the podcast, called Good to Great by Jim Collins.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about getting the right people on the bus and then deciding where to go, whereas a lot of companies will decide, this is what we want to achieve in the next 5 years, let's find the people to help us achieve it.
Oh, interesting.
So they do it the opposite. Yeah. What he says in that book is that the great companies do it the other way around. Get all the right people in, get them into the right jobs where they do feel energized. Now let's decide where we're going to go. Now what can we all achieve together? Like, and that.
Yeah.
And that was one of those moments for me. I was like, that's a good one. I hadn't thought of it that way. You'd always kind of think, well, I'll decide where the company is going to go, and I'll get all the right people to help me get there. Whereas really, if you really want to build a good team, it should be the other way around. So.
I love that idea for so many different reasons. And I think for me, finding the right people is that values alignment piece that I kind of mentioned at the start. So finding the right people whose values align with your values and whose maybe goals and aspirations and maybe want to solve those same problems that you want to solve and ask them for their ideas. What do you think? What can you bring to the table?
Yeah.
I love that idea. So it's not just like, here's where I want to get to. How are you going to help me get there? It's collectively, this is the problem we're trying to solve. What do you think? What are the ways that we can solve this? How could we try that in a safe way? And, you know, you might get ideas that you never thought of before. And people buy into things and they'll want to stay longer where they've designed what that outcome is going to look like.
Yeah, our North Star at Skilding is, I always just keep saying, is will it help somebody to learn something? Like that's what you base your decision on. Will it help somebody to learn something?
Mm-hmm.
And if it does, then we can do it. You know, that's kind of the, in this book as well, he says, I highlighted something here from it. Every morning in the shower, I ask myself three questions to prime my mind for a positive day. What can I be excited about today? What or who might trip me up or cause me stress? And how can I respond to it in a positive way from my highest self? Who can I surprise today with a thank you, a gift, or a moment of appreciation? That is three great questions to start your day with to generate that positive energy, I suppose, especially that last one. I love that. I heard it on a podcast there a while ago. I don't know if you listen to Modern Wisdom by Chris Williamson. He's great. But he says every day he'll text two or three people and just say that he's thinking about them, just people in his life, just because he was thinking about them. I'll just say, I'm thinking about you. Like those little things, that is a gift in itself, just to text someone and say, how's it going? You know, just thinking about you.
Yeah.
Hope you're well kind of thing. So those three questions, I think, are a great way to generate energy as well.
But I think, like, there's a few things that come up for me. And again, this is a habit that I try and start all the time, but I don't always maintain, is journaling and reflection. So taking that time out to really think about those questions. And I think sometimes, like, you don't always wake up and jump out of bed and think, I'm so excited for the day. But those questions, I think, can prime you for having more of a positive experience.
Yeah.
And coming back to this idea of, you know, if we complain about our life and say, no one ever texts me to say they're thinking of me. Like, that might be what people are thinking right now. I don't get those texts to say someone's thinking of me, because that's, I think, by default, we're primed for the negative, aren't we? Like, that doesn't happen to me. Why doesn't that happen to me? But then if you shift that and turn it around and say, but I'm not doing that for anyone else, so how can I take responsibility? And so if you are doing that, and it makes you feel happy to make other people happy.
Yeah.
So if you're doing that and taking responsibility for doing that, and just, I love the idea of dropping a text to three people and just say, listen, I'm just thinking of you today.
Yeah.
you know, you're brightening up their day, but they're going to brighten up someone else's day, and it becomes this big karmic thing.
Yeah, and I think as well, you're not doing it to, you know, to get something. That's the whole, that's the beauty of that gift, is that you're doing it for, with no expectations of receiving one back, or
But it makes you feel good.
Yeah, that's it. And again, that just helps generate your energy, generate good energy. And do you know what I think sometimes? This is a bit kind of philosophical maybe, but sometimes when I'm feeling a bit overwhelmed or a bit kind of, you know, what's the point in anything kind of thing. So where I am right now, right, I'm in what I like to call the Grand Library. It's what my wife and kids call the shed, but it is the Grand Library.
Love it.
And it's at the back of the garden, so I'm looking up at the house now. And there's another room just off this Grand Library where there's a fridge freezer, basically. And I'm forever having to take bread out of the freezer for the kids' lunches in the morning. I'm always doing it at 11 o'clock at night, going, oh, Jesus. Just about to go to bed, and I have to get bread out of the freezer, come down the cold to get the thing. But the amount of times I've come down here and glanced up at the sky and seen the stars and just been absolutely blown away by it. Like, just, we're all hurtling through space. I get really, like, do you know, sometimes you get those kind of moments of gratitude of, just when you weren't expecting them, like, I'm only going down to the freezer to get bread out. And then you're going, oh my God, like, we're hurtling through space and you're looking up at the stars. There's something in that for me that helps me kind of, it just dulls all that stress and like, oh, nothing actually matters except for what I decide matters. So everything is fine. You know, everything is going to work out. And like, nobody knows what they're doing. Just do your best and, you know, solve interesting problems with good people. That's what I think. Habit three is raise necessity. So he says here at the start of this chapter, know who needs your A game, affirm the way, level up your squad. And actually, there's a quote from Albert Einstein as well. Only one who devotes himself to a cause with his whole strength and soul can be a true master. For this reason, mastery demands all of a person. So really, that's about, well, actually, what do you think that's about?
There's a couple of things that come up for me. So the first one is kind of building on this idea of clarity. And it's knowing what needs to be done. Like, what is the absolute necessity? What is the, what are the, sorry, I was going to say, what are their priorities? But I think one of the things I took from the book was this idea of priorities was never a thing. It's priority.
Yeah.
What is the priority? There's only ever one priority.
Yeah.
And if you have more than one, then it's not a priority.
Yeah.
It's multiple tasks that need to be done. What is the number one priority, I think, is one thing. And then the other thing that's coming up for me is this idea of burning the boats. So if you've ever heard this concept that if you really want to do something, you need to make sure that you absolutely have to do it. So the idea of burning the boats is you go to this island and then you burn the boats that brought you to this island. So you're committing to this cause and you're making it an absolute necessity that it has to succeed.
Yeah, there was a guy called Gary Fox on my podcast a while ago, and he talked about the book, The Psychology of Money. And we touched on that idea of burning the boats, and we were talking about like starting a business. So his podcast has gone very well, The Entrepreneur Experiment, it's called. We were talking this idea of burning the boats, and it doesn't necessarily mean financially. It can be emotionally or psychologically to decide, I am going to do this thing. So what happens a lot of people when they're starting businesses, I think, especially if they have a mortgage and, you know, people are relying on them, they can't just quit their job and dive. Like, it's a very romantic thing. Like, oh, I quit my job and I just, this, and then 6 months later, I sold my company for 100 million euro. You know, like, you hear those stories, or maybe not that dramatic, but burning the boats doesn't necessarily mean quitting your job. Burning the boats could mean emotionally, I am committing to this project. I'm going to give up going for pints. I'm going to give up going to the cinema. I'm going to give up, you know, whatever the thing is. I'm going to spend my spare time on this thing.
Yeah,
and that's
I'm going
how
to stop
I
stop my Netflix account.
Yeah,
although that's whatever, seems very drastic.
Yeah, that is there. There's no need for that. That's crazy talk, Eva. You can't be doing that. But yeah, like the idea being that burning the bolts is important, but it doesn't necessarily mean quitting your job, like and leaving yourself in the lurch. Like, if it was just me, I would have lived in a box to get this up and running. Like, I wouldn't have cared.
Yeah.
but you can't do that. You're like, it just isn't practical, you know. That, and it annoys me when people say that you need to dive in, you know, fully committed. Well, that's all well and good, but who's going to pay my mortgage while I'm diving in fully committed, you know?
Yeah.
But that necessity is so important for high achievers. You have to commit to this. You have to commit to the thing. Whatever the thing is, you have to commit to it. Habit four is increase productivity. This is, it says here that increase the outputs that matter. Chart your five moves. Get insanely good at key skills, which is, seems obvious, this one, I think, is it?
I think the entire book, it's not exactly revelatory. Yeah. Like, it's not all new stuff. I think it's organized in such a way that makes it really easy to understand and really clear. And going back to our earlier point, just because you know this stuff doesn't mean that you're actually doing it. What I think Brendan does really well is helping us to actually see what that means, what that looks like in real life, and how, what are the steps that we personally need to take, kind of challenging us to think about, well, what do we actually do? Productivity is something that I have been interested in for as long as I can remember. Always in my corporate role, I was like, okay, so reading up all of the HBR articles about, like, oh, what day of the week should you do certain tasks? It's something I'm still hugely interested in. And I mean, I have so much to say about productivity in general, but if I could bring insights from this one TED talk that I saw with Dori Clark, where she talks about this idea that we choose busyness. So we choose business because it makes us feel good. It makes us feel like we're contributing in some way. But actually, the difference between productivity and busyness is this idea of being busy doing the stuff that's important. And again, guilty of this as ever, like, I will spend hours doing stuff that's maybe not necessarily important, but we need to take that time up front to say, what are the important things that I get done this year? Like, I find it really hard to think about it in a year, but like, even if you think about it this quarter, this month, this week, today, what are the important things that I need to get done today that are going to make the difference? So I'll give a personal example for me. I spent a huge number of hours putting all of my previous podcast episodes, which had video recorded, into YouTube. Like, what does that actually do for me at the end of the day? I spent all of these hours doing it. How important is it? Maybe in the long term, excuse me, maybe in the long term it will be important, but for now, for the immediate term, I've spent so much time actually uploading all of those videos and writing all of the descriptions and the titles and all of that kind of stuff. How important was that for me to do that? Or am I just doing it for the sake of feeling productive or feeling like I'm being busy and contributing in some way to my business because I neglected to really think about what is the best use of my time today? And I think, again, going to back to this idea of high performers, you really need to think, what is the best use of my time today?
And it's a big thing with people like us who are running businesses where nobody tells you what to do. Like, so you're sitting there going, what will I do today? And again, it's the North Star. Will it help somebody learn something if I do this? That's kind of, and then there's days like where you're kind of have a cheat day, like where you think, I'm going to make a new logo. That's what I'm going to do. Like, you kind of have these little silly...
makes you feel great.
Yeah, exactly. Little fluffy things that you do.
And you have something to show for it.
Yeah,
You have something to show for it, but will it actually make a difference? And again, I think it's important to recognize that the habits sort of stack on top of each other. You can't get really good at being productive if you don't have that clarity of what it is that you're trying to achieve in the first place.
Yeah, exactly.
And investing that time up front, and whether it's investing in a coach to really help you to do that, because the thinking that brought you to where you are is not going to help you to get out of the situation that you're in. This is something I'm really focusing on for 2024, is to have a lot more external perspectives on what it is that I'm doing, like get that guidance from a mentor, from a coach on what it is that I'm doing with my business. And again, like, is it bringing a team together of like, this is the problem that we want to solve together. How are we going to solve that problem?
Yeah. That is, especially when you're by yourself, making the decisions, you can fall in love with an idea. You think it's a great idea. And I don't know where I heard this a while ago about killing your babies. Like, there's something that's so precious to you, but sometimes you have to kill your babies and think, you know, that's got to lay this one down. Like playing poker or something. Got a great hand in poker, but you think, I'm pretty sure he is a better hand. And oh, I'm going to have to lay this one down. It's a killer. It's a killer to do it. But it sometimes, And then what I find as well is that something else I heard years ago, no work is ever wasted. So even if you spent hours and hours or even months or years on something and it never went anywhere or never did anything, you've gotten experience from that, or you've gotten, there's something you can't even sometimes put your finger on that even if just built your resilience to actually get something done, kind of thing. So,
or you've learned something from the experience, or you've learned what you don't want, or learned what you do want, or learned what you shouldn't do. Yeah. You know, there's always a learning. It's this idea of throwing good time at, no, what is it? Throwing good money after bad, isn't that what they say? Yeah. And it's the same for time, throwing good time after bad. Like, so if you've invested a lot of time, or the sunken cost fallacy, but in relation to time as well. So if you've invested a huge amount of time into something, it doesn't mean that you shouldn't walk away from it, because that, like, now you've realized it's not a great investment of your time. Now you need to do something about it and invest your time in something that is more beneficial. But then there's the other extreme as well, of constantly focusing on how do I maximize my time and how do I become the most productive, when we're seeing actually rest is a really important factor in that as well, and making time for rest, and times when you're just not productive at all in the kind of grand sense of the meaning.
Yeah, and I think that two things. One, the resting is hugely important. I find that I can work in maybe 10, 15 minute bursts and I have to just walk away and do something else, or and I used to kind of beat myself up about that and kind of, you know, go, oh, you know, I should be more productive. But really, just what's your output like? And that's just my rhythm of working, I think, is just to kind of do small little bursts. And the second thing then is, I think, when you have those days where you're not productive, just forgive yourself. Like, there was times, like, say, previous versions of what I'm doing now, where I just ran out of road. I had nothing. I couldn't think of anything else to do. Like, I'd kind of run down all the leads. I'd try to convince people to help me build it and whatever, and got nowhere. And those days I just kind of had given up. And I remember thinking, you just have to show up, open the laptop, and do one thing. Do the first thing. Like, and it's the same with working out like that. You know, don't make your decision until you've got the shorts on you. Okay, you've got your shorts on, got the t-shirt on. Am I standing in front of the weights? Okay, now make the decision. Do you still not want to work out? Okay, lift it once. And you slowly kind of build it that way. Like, that's how you kind of build your momentum. So, yeah, I think
one decision at a time.
Exactly, yeah.
And make the decisions easy to make as well.
Yeah, exactly,
so,
you remove the friction.
You know, have the runners beside the bed in the morning.
All that stuff, yeah.
Put the alarm at the other side. So you can't just turn it off by clicking on snooze or whatever. Like, you're out of bed now. Well, I may as well get up. It's much harder, I think, to get back into bed, isn't it, once you've gotten out of the bed in the first place.
Yeah, I think Tim Ferriss talks about, like, trending in the right direction, that, you know, your productivity or your progress, it's not going to be a straight line from where you are to where you want to get to. It's a squiggly line.
I like that idea.
It's trending in the right direction. Like, there's definitely days where, you know, that you just don't do the thing you're supposed to do because I'm just not doing it today. Like, I just...
I love the concept of a towards move versus an away move. So if you're not doing anything, maybe that's just kind of standing still. But are you doing something that's moving you towards what it is that you want to achieve or moving you away from what it is that you want to achieve, whether that be a relationship, whether that be your business, you know, whatever goal that you have set for yourself? Are you making an away or a towards move towards it?
Yeah, and that's exactly it, I think, is that, you know, open the laptop. Do one thing, do something, read an article, you know, connect with one person on LinkedIn, do something. And if that's all you get done, then forgive yourself. That's okay. Like, this is like, look up at the stars. It's all nonsense anyway. Like, you're all just, we're all just hurtling through space, right? So don't worry about it. That's what I think. The last one then is demonstrate courage. I skipped one there. Develop influence was habit five. Mm. And there's a great quote here from Gandhi. Power is of two kinds. One is obtained by the fear of punishment and the other by acts of love. And the takeaways from this section is teach people how to think, challenge people to grow, role model the way. Discuss.
For me, I think the role modeling is so important that sometimes we put expectations on other people that we don't place on ourselves. So if we can act in the way that we want other people to act, and again, this idea of setting boundaries. So if people are, if people are not behaving in the way that you want them to behave, but it's kind of like the more I understand about boundaries, it's about yourself and protecting yourself. So it's doing what's good for yourself and communicating like these are the consequences if I am exposed to this type of behavior, whatever it might be. So someone's treating you poorly, whatever. But for me, yeah, the role modeling piece, I think, is so important. So are you showing up in the way that you want to show up in the world? And it would be amazing for me to say, yes, of course, every day I'm
flawless,
you know, showing up as flawless, completely flawless. But I've noticed recently that I'm showing up in ways with certain people that I don't like. That's not the person that I want to be. I'm hijacked by my emotions. Yeah. So it's, first of all, I think noticing when that is happening, but what is the root cause around that? And for me, I think it's where I'm living at the moment. I don't get the opportunity to go out in nature every day and go out for a walk and do the things that I would normally do and do meditations and, you know, just be able to kind of get outside. We're living in a place that's quite remote, and my parents were visiting at the, my parents were visiting recently, and the joy of being able to walk across the road to the supermarket was like, oh my god, we can actually walk across the road to the supermarket. And it made me realize the frustration that I have with the environment that I'm in right now. So it's like, okay, so if I'm noticing that that stuff is happening, what can I do? I can do certain things. I can move my body in other ways. If I'm not getting out for a walk, I can do yoga or something instead. So for me, yeah, it's role modeling that behavior. But when you're noticing that you're not behaving in the way that you would like to be perceived, again, this action versus intention. My intention is obviously to be a nice person, to be perceived as being kind and whatever, but you don't always show up in that way. And so what's causing that, that when you're not showing up in that way, what is triggering you, and being able to, I think, identify that.
Yeah, that introspection is a big part, I think, of being a leader for a team, or like, just like you said, at any point in your life, just reflecting on going, this is, like you said, this is not who I want to be, or this is not how I want to show up for other people in my life. So yeah, that role model the way is so important, and that only comes from taking time to think and to reflect and to have that introspection, I suppose. So
but I think it's important as well to think about how you can bring out the best in others. I remember when I was a manager, it was a question I was asked often, like, how are you bringing out the best? Like, we have this one guy in particular, super smart. He was a rocket scientist. Like, that was his background. And I, to this day, have no idea why he took a job working where we were working, because he was so, not to say that the people that I worked with weren't smart, but he just seemed quite out of place given his background and everything. But anyway, again, going back to this idea of fit, he wasn't a great fit for the team, for the role, etc. I think his capabilities were much more beyond what he was able to be given. But one of the questions I was continually asked is like, how are you bringing out the best in him? And until that point, I never probably even considered that was my responsibility. But I think as a leader, you have to challenge yourself and say, how am I bringing out the best in my team? One of the conversations that I've had recently on the podcast was so interesting to me. It was this idea of the environment versus, like, we tend to put the blame on people. If they're not performing well, they're a bad performer. Rather than thinking we've created this environment where they can't thrive, they can't perform at their best. So I think if you continually ask yourself, how can I bring out the best? And again, coming back to personal examples, if I get triggered by something and I get hijacked by emotions and I lash out at someone, of course they're going to respond to that, or they're going to, sorry, they're not going to respond, they're going to react to that as well. So that's how, what I've brought out in them because of whatever's been triggered in me.
Yeah. There's another great book. All I do is quote books, but the truth about lying, it's about reading people's body language. And
okay, interesting. Yeah.
So the first thing that he talks about in this book is we're all rubbish at it. You're terrible at reading body language. So don't even take everything with a pinch of salt almost. But one of the, I'll see if I can remember all seven of them now. So the first thing you're looking for is baseline behavior. So baseline behavior is basically, what are they like in a normal situation? Then you ask challenging questions. And when you ask the challenging question or the probing question, you're looking for changes in that baseline behavior.
Okay.
Then you're looking for clusters of change. So clusters is like, you know, they were tapping their foot, now they stopped tapping their foot, and now they're scratching their head kind of thing or something. Then you're looking for consistency in those clusters of changes. So if you relax them again by just talking about normal stuff, then you probe them again. Are there clusters in those changes, or are there consistencies in those clusters of changes? Then you're looking for cross-contamination, which is kind of what made me think of this here. The cross-contamination is, what are you adding to the situation? Mm-hmm. Like if I ask you a question and you don't respond, you cannot not communicate. That's the point in this book, is that everything I say to you, even you sitting there stoic faced and saying nothing, you're telling me something.
It's like you can't not make a decision.
Yeah.
Not making a decision is the decision. A decision.
Yeah. And the last one then is, actually I mixed two up there. Contamination is you know, how are you contaminating the situation basically? And cross-checking then is basically, you don't know anything about reading body language, so check and double check and triple check what you're doing. But that's what maybe that what you're saying there has made me think of that, is that like everything, you could say that somebody in your team is not performing to what you think is the best of their ability, but what are you doing to facilitate that, or to help them out of the quagmire that they're in? So interesting. Habit six then is demonstrate courage. Another great quote here. There are two ways of meeting difficulties. You alter the difficulties, or you alter yourself to meet them. So you honor the struggle, share your truth and ambitions, find someone to fight for. These are quite philosophical and deep. What I thought about when I read this was this idea of that quote there, basically. There are two different ways of meeting difficulties. Alter the difficulties, or you alter yourself to meet them. Again, thinking about my kids and raising them, I don't want to bubble wrap them. I don't want to, you know, don't have you ever heard of a snowplow parent where they just kind of clear the path for the kids and make sure nothing ever hurts them ever?
I've heard of helicopter parenting.
Yeah. Snowplow is like basically just, you know, nothing will ever get in their way kind of thing.
Yeah.
And me and my wife be big fans of neither of those. Provide them with the tools to deal with adversity. Like
them that life is actually, it's hard.
It's like the Viktor Frankl thing, you know, between stimulus and response, there's a gap, and in that gap is your opportunity to decide how you're going to react to it. So, so that demonstrate courage is so important as well. And again, one of the ways I would find courage is by looking up at the stars and going, well, none of this really matters. So like, just try and do the thing.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's really nice. And I think, again, for me, and maybe tying it up to the conversation that we had at the start in relation to people leaving jobs, and it takes an awful lot of courage for people to leave job, to leave that stability, to leave, you know, sometimes it's better the devil you know.
Yeah, yeah.
That you're staying somewhere, but you know what it's like there. Whereas if you're taking a step into the unknown, maybe that exactly that same thing is going to happen to you, but you don't have the support network, you don't have the friends in that new situation, whatever it might be. But I think taking that step, taking the small step, I think helps us to build courage as well. So what are the small steps that you can take, that you can build on every day, that foster that sense of courage? And I think oftentimes we confuse it and we think that we're going to have courage from thinking and planning, but actually what it happens is that it comes from doing.
Yeah.
So you need to actually take that action. You need to have the courage to take that first step, but then you build momentum over time from that. And even when things go wrong, you have to understand that you can learn from that, or you can seek out support, or you can decide that that was not the right thing for you, or it wasn't the right time and you're going to try it a different time. You know, there's so many learnings I think that we could take from actions that we've had the courage to do, even if they haven't worked out well.
I think that's a great way to end the podcast, Aoife. Tell all the nice people where they could find you if they wanted to find you.
Yeah, best place to find me, if you're listening to a podcast, have a search for the Happier at Work podcast. So wherever you're listening, it should be available. It's on YouTube as well. I'm quite active on LinkedIn, so if you want to connect with me, it's Aoife O'Brien, and I'll spell it out for the non-Irish native Irish speakers. It's A-O-I-F-E, and then it's O'Brien, O'Brien. But best place probably to connect with me, since you're listening to a podcast already, is search for the Happier at Work podcast.
Excellent. Aoife, thanks a million.
Absolutely loved this. I could talk about this all day. I think we've so much more to explore, but I really hope that people took something from it. Either they go out and they buy the book, or they take something from what we've talked about and they make one small change, whatever it is that they're doing, or just change the way they're thinking about things.
Excellent. Thanks. Hey, before you go, just a quick message about Skilding and what we're all about. We believe that true learning happens when you understand, remember, and deliberately practice your newly acquired knowledge. This podcast just covered the first part. You now understand the key takeaways from this book. To help you remember them, we will send you three interactive summaries that accompany this episode to empower you to remember the key takeaways at that moment of truth. To really embed the knowledge from this episode, you can use the dedicated and completely private digital portfolio to set a time and a date to go out into the big bad world and deliberately practice the key takeaways covered in this episode. For all this and for all of our podcast episodes, head over to skillding.com, that's skillding.com, and search for the title of this episode. Until next time.